Hello, everybody, and it's so great to welcome you back to part three of this conversation that we're having with Oshun regarding terminology such as white privilege, white fragility. We're talking about racism, and this is part three, and it's known as the willingness to repair. Oshun is a great lady. A very special friend. She is initiated priestess of the Holy Order of Mary Magdalene. She's an initiated medicine woman of the native and African traditions. And she is the very best Black Madonna guide you would ever care to meet in southern France. So, if you remember, in part one, I spoke about how last year this feedback came my way that I had offended a woman of color because I was sharing a very grandiose story of how long and hard it was for me to access my sacred rage and not taking into account that perhaps for people of color, it's not hard to access that at all. It's literally there on the next breath, and I caused offense. So a few months later, the feedback came my way. And of course I went into my white fragility and all sorts of humiliation, guilt, regret, fear, and this, what I would call over the top apology. I wanted to speak to her. I wanted to put everything right. I wanted to solve this situation and that she'd been mistaken in thinking that I had intended to cause her any offense at all. This lady was not willing yet at that time to speak with me. So I was left not knowing what to do about this. And that is where this terminology, the repair, is important. Because I needed some answers. Well, what do I do now? I've caused great offense. I know it's big. I can feel it in my body. But I was not prepared to just let everything just kind of slink back down out of sight again. So I got myself my first book. And I said to that woman, inside of my own self, I'm going to do something with this. I know it. This apology has to turn into action. And so I educated myself, and I'm still just an absolute baby. I've only read a few books. I'm learning from people. I'm putting myself out here with Oshun, you know, in the hot seat, experiencing it for real. So this is my repair to that woman. I'm not an expert, I'm messy, it's partially formed. But even though I'm in that state, I'm still gonna show up rugged and ragged and to do some action around the offense I made a year ago. So I really truly welcome Oshun back here again for the last time. Hey, Oshun. How does that sound? When I speak like that, how does that sound?
Well, one of the things I kind of captured when you were speaking about your, that first immediate rage that you got in touch with because it meant that you were being viewed as being racist.
Yeah.
Or, you know, because that's the sweet term for that, and that's being used a lot today, is white privilege, or that you were standing on the morals of your white privilege. And most people who are in, certainly are in our spiritual communities, or, you know, just the community of, you know, New Age and any kind of communities, they really don't adopt the idea that they could have those racist tendencies. Mm. And, you know, coming from another position, coming from perhaps a position where I may be seated, We see it all the time. And I you know, one of the things that, because I, as a woman of African descent, we sometimes split those things into what the idea of racism and where white privilege comes in is white people, black people, but it's really across a huge domain of people of color. And where the same privileges are not manifested, realized. So what I heard with your discussion, it immediately, well, yeah, you were put in rage because someone called you on yourself. And called you on yourself in a way that you really don't want to be known as. We have, you know, and because we're talking about repair, I'm really glad because I don't talk so much about immediately about the separation of people by race, religion, and all that thing. I leave that to people who really want to do that kind of thing, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. And I call it when I see it, and when I'm encountering it directly myself. I've had a few instances, because, you know, there's a myth across America that, for example, many black people moved to Europe because there was no racism here. Or for black Americans, they found home, and they didn't have to worry about, you know, the artists, of course, in the earlier days, going in through the back door to a restaurant where they were going to be performing. It didn't exist once they came to Europe. Things like that just did not exist. And so you had many artists, musicians especially, who moved to France and other places. So there was that myth that, you know, we don't have the same treatment. Well, I've loved this country for most of my life, long before I moved here. And it wasn't because of that. I just had some kind of a relationship with the country that I did not know why. And of course, I marry a Frenchman as well. And once we moved to France, I began to have, you know, make friends with people, with French women in this area where I was living in Toulouse. And I remember one day, I was still learning to speak French. And I didn't care, you know, I thought, I'm going to learn this language if it, you know, I just have to start talking. And because I'm not here to speak English with a bunch of Americans living in France. You know, there was an association called Americans in Toulouse, and they all hung out with each other. But I wanted to speak the language very much. So I could just speak. One day she said, oh, laughing with me about something that I said. And she said, I just love it when you, j'adore quand tu parles comme un petit nègre. You know, I love to hear it when you talk like a little nigger.
Gosh.
And I was like, what did you say? And she told me again, j'adore quand tu parles comme un petit nègre. And I just was like, stupefied. I was like, girl, don't you ever say something like that. And she was offended that I found offense to that at first. And she said, it's just a cultural expression that we have. And I was like, honey, that expression comes from colonialism in Africa. When you all have a view of Africans being less than you, and they're not educated to be very, you know, as brilliantly educated as you, and they're regularly put in their place, and so they always, you know, shuffling and bowing to you, the French person, the white guy, and you just think they're cute. You think an old man, your elder, is cute because he's subordinate to you. And I said, that is not an expression for you to use ever. And she was mortified. And she said, I never thought of it that way. I will never, never say that again. Mm. I will never, ever use that phrase again. And I know she meant it.
Yeah.
So, you know, when this woman came to you and this expression of, you know, you not being able to get in touch with your rage.
Mm.
Well, I don't know if it's so much rage sometimes, you know, and I just recently was talking to a young girl, and as I was clarifying some things, you know, my voice carries and it can sound, you know, really strong. And I think the poor girl was petrified. She didn't know what to do with me. And I know this is also one of the dynamics that we have, you know, oh God, a angry black woman. You know, when it's time for us to clarify things and put it in place and put white folks in their place, and or whoever, oh God, now we're angry black women.
Mm-hmm.
And I was called that almost once as well when this British woman tried to put me in my place and tell me how to raise my black child. That was interesting. But when you are enraged about something, it's good that what you did was like, okay, that's something that's for real.
Yeah.
And I have truly offended someone. And as you said, you know, you went and got a new Bible.
Mm. Mm.
To learn what this is.
Mm.
You know, when it comes knocking on your doorstep, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
I spoke with someone else in the, you know, someone in the New Age community, yoga instructor, who had been called on non-diversity at one point. And, you know, I later understand that, you know, she's gone on and is doing quite a lot and very engaged in that. But I remember we had a discussion, a lunch once, and one of the things was, I was like, oh, girl, bravo. Somebody called you out. Because you're just too beautiful to keep calm like that. Ooh, that's good news. You need to find out about some things. And, you know, I don't know. I never heard from her again. But, you know, I think sometimes, well, you know, I will have a tendency in my nature more to make things light.
Mm.
Not to take things and leave it, however.
Yeah.
By what I mean by light is I find life in itself rather humorous. And, you know, we are living dreams and we're living energies through us. They're streaming through us, and how, to what degree we adopt them as ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So as we're talking about where do we go from here and how, what is the process of mending or restoring our soul to what we are truly, is I'm glad that, because that's a conversation also that has to be had. But the conversation has to be had. And most people do not want that talk.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to go that deep. As I said, you know, I think last week, my question for you was, you know, like, how did I get into this? I am no research expert on undoing racism.
Mm.
I just live my life, and I am also brought in touch with it.
Yeah.
But I'm not brought in touch with it like many people are. And I can't say that it's because I don't carry anything, you know, because, you know, it's there. I just, you know, it's just there. And one of the things that in any kind of healing that I have found is really good is that we have to ask ourselves, when did we first give our authority away? Who was it to? And how does it affect me today still?
Yeah.
And there's also within that, whoever has that feeling inside of them also ends up being perpetuators. And so they can also ask themselves, when did I first have the impression that I, because of my race or my religion, was superior to anyone else. And where does that come from? Mm. As for example, if it's religion and you try to use the Bible, that's not going to work. Because it doesn't say white folks are superior to Mexicans, Native Americans, Black people, and anybody else they choose to be superior to. It doesn't say that. So it was taught through the ism that is racism. And so it can be a dialogue. When did I give away, when did I choose to take by force if necessary and think that it was true or correct? And feel where that resides, feel it, because it is a rage that is there. And so there is one place where, you know, you could get in touch with your rage. Because just by the nature of where you are, and just you can look at it a little as how, what's that sister's name again? You know, I'm terrible with names sometimes. Anne Hathaway.
Yeah.
Everything revolves around my whiteness. Get in touch with that, you know, that unconsciousness on your part. That, you know, why do I choose to not pay attention to that fact that that's true? And then begin to see where, you know, people's participations are in these dramas that we play. I ask myself those things, those questions all the time. What's my participation in this? So I find myself less and less in situations where I have to put my foot down. And, you know, I choose to take no prisoners in my life. I choose to take no prisoners. I choose to harbor no anger. I just don't want to do that in my life. Because it's going to come back and bite me somewhere else.
There's another element in this book, in the repair section. And it's really important. You see, one of the things we have to realize is that people of color are not going to teach us how to do the repair. We should not be expecting them to show us how. We got to figure it out. We got to read. We got to attend gatherings. We got to go to seminars. Oh, we're having a power cut. What another really important step for white people is to interrupt racism when you see it being spoken or you see it, you see it coming alive in your white friends. So I imagined that. I imagined what that would look like. Wow, that's a big piece. But I'm going to say to Ocean through this screen, this is a heavy word, I vow to be awake to whenever I hear any form of racism. And I vow to interrupt it. I vow to step in, bring awareness around it. And this is, again, another part of my repair. Since Ocean and I have been doing these talks, Ocean's been sending me all kinds of video snippets, and I've been watching and coming to terms with this in a deeper level. So that's another way white people can show up, is to actually speak up when you hear that shit being spoken. And just start to break the pattern. And of course, surely another way would be education. You know, right at the earliest years.
Yeah. Well, just like racism itself is a learned behavior. You know, we are all born the same. But we are taught to behave the way we're going to behave in this world. And often as parents, if we don't as parents assume the role and not just throwing a book at your child, but bringing up discussions as they come up in the moment when it's now, and also not waiting for that.
Yeah.
You know, also placing your children in situations where they will always be aware that there are problems like that that are going on in the world, and they're not changing. Mm. They don't change because people don't stand up. I recently saw a clip of a young girl in South Africa, and they were standing up in protest of, I can't remember what it was right now their protest was about. I think I sent you that link just today. And in this, she began to talk about in how getting engaged, everybody getting engaged in the dialogue and in the politics of change, mm-hmm. who recognize these things are, it's a time for these massive changes to happen. And she referred to herself and her generation as the rainbow born free ones. I've never heard that expression before, but this is our post-apartheid children. Mm. They don't know nothing about that other apartheid, growing up in it and the struggles of it, except that it is a historical fact and their parents and grandparents have lived through that and they know it. Mm-hmm. And so, but they know, we don't have to take no crap off white people. So they were having a sit-in. And she said, I love the video. This young white man came up to me and said, you've got 5 minutes to get out of here. Because according to the law, such and such and such of 1959, you have no right to be here in this demonstration. And she said, what? Please do not make me have to go off here. You think you have the right to tell me to do anything based on some apartheid law of 1959? Give me a break. Mm. Mm. That law still exists. That law still exists. Those laws that get to stay in place, and they creep in and they stay in place because they come in service at a certain time. Mm. And those are the kinds of laws that have to be changed.
Yeah.
Now, one of the other things is that, because they could lay on that law and they did arrest them. She said they were through tear gas, water hose, hit, beat in the face, and taken to prison, all of them, she said, in 2019, based on some apartheid law in 1959. So America has those laws that are certainly post-Civil War, certainly post-Civil Rights. But they don't take these laws out because they come up later. And I'll give you an example of that when I was buying a house in Ojai. Mm. And I was in law for 20 years with contracts and everything. I read everything. Fine print? Oh, no, I'm reading fine print, especially. I start with the fine print. So I'm reading that, and here's a law that says black people don't have the right to own property in Ojai.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, I'm all y'all out, Ojai. Okay, now because it's Ventura County, we'll say. It is in the title. So I'm not signing that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's just a law. The other law is that except for in this statement, things like that no longer are valid. I said, well, if it's not valid, then it should not be in that contract. And if I sign it, let me tell you, from where I sit, these laws can just pop up any moment. Look at affirmative action. Doesn't exist anymore. Little by little, the rights of the civil rights movement, it's as though that never happened.
Yeah.
We are at a return moment. Mm-hmm. So they leave those laws there, and I tell you, and I told her, you know, white realtor, that law right there can come up and bite me in my butt.
Yeah.
So I'm scratching it out. Oh, if you scratch it out, then this. I said, well, if it doesn't count anymore, it doesn't count if I scratch it out, does it?
Yeah.
So, these are the things that everybody has to be aware of.
Yeah.
There are your laws in England that you're not paying attention to that are racist against other groups of people that people just say, oh, that doesn't matter anymore. Yeah, it does.
Yes. Yeah. I was wondering, Ocean, we were talking earlier, I'm writing this, I'm retelling a myth going all the way back to Adam and Eve, and even before then. So a few days, obviously this is consuming me at the moment because we're in this three-part series. So in my imagination, I asked my character, Eve, to come forward. And she was a white girl. She had the long red hair. She was wearing her little fig. And I kind of looked at her and went, And then I said in my imagination, I want the real Eve to step forward. And from behind the white Eve came a black Eve. She's had short cropped hair, big long neck, and I guess Ethiopian perhaps. And she stepped forward and I looked into her face and I went, you are the real one. So then I went straight to Google, Cradle of Mankind, Africa. Could it be that the root of this is that the first human woman, I don't know about the man, the first human woman was, without any question, black. And is that what white folks deep inside are freaking scared of?
Well, perhaps it is. You know, are you familiar with Lucia Birnbaum?
No.
She is a professor of Southern Italy, but she is in California, and she's written a wonderful book on the black mother.
Mm.
And she goes to a place with the black Madonna that, you know, it's just not my place to go to. My whole thing with the black Madonna is another direction. But she starts out with the reason why the black Madonna is least known in the world, certainly in the European world, where so many of them are, is because of racism.
Mm.
Because Europe, this is from an Italian woman, and she prefaces that in her book first. If, because you don't want to recognize, you know, your origins, and that even the whole mythological stories, you know, Jesus and Mary and that whole region, and when it's described that, you know, his skin is of burnt brass and his hair lamb's wool.
Mm.
I don't usually see that with the blonde hair and the blue eyes.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a play years ago where Jesus was black.
Yeah.
This is on Broadway in New York. All the characters were, and there were tickets outside. In 1990, picketing from Christians that you are demonizing God.
Mm.
Can you imagine?
I can, unfortunately.
You know, I always say that the shades of change protect the guilty, but you know, it's normal. People want to have their icons look like them, but then you adopt a religion and you think that it's belongs to you. And this is one of the things of going back to the beginning. You know, people say, well, you know, I think Jesus is probably a black guy, you know, and then someone said, well, you know, he really is of God, so it doesn't matter what color, he's all colors.
Mm-hmm.
It's threatened, throw that one out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, look, this is about wanting to be open to understand and to change a view that we have ourselves, and not lean on the, you know, rewriting spiritual passages. Lean on rewriting our false impressions of ourselves and how the world is, people around us,
yeah,
and taking action with that. And that action has to come from a deeper place. You know, it has to come from the will to change ourselves.
Mm.
It has to come from not being afraid to hear about how we are. You know, nobody gets a free ride. You know, Undoing Racism is what I love about that organization and that plan that the People's Institute is doing. Everybody has to do it. Black people are not exempt, because we don't know often to what degree we participate in perpetuating a drama like racism.
Mm.
And sometimes, you know, we talked last week about people like, you know, white people want to be allies for change. Bravo. You get to be allies for the change. Don't stop when it looks like the change is there. Yeah. At the same time, people of color end up wanting to be allies to the racism because they think that, oh, is this going to be a benefit for me? We certainly have seen that. So we all need to undo this piece.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, speak to our spiritual leaders. You know, speak to our spiritual leaders when we feel rage. One of mine is this amazing, you know, Kabbalist in South Africa, who I just learned so much with him, and he's just wonderful. And when the situation at the border of Mexico was happening, I think I may have mentioned this to you before. I was crying so much I couldn't pray.
Yeah.
And he brought something to me that was basically, if you can't do this, we're all lost. And I lived through apartheid, he said. And that stopped me right in my tracks.
Yeah.
Okay, he lived in the midst of what that was. Okay. But what he said was about knowing beauty. And if you don't see it, it doesn't exist. So if you can't see beauty in something, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Period. Another great elder, when Nelson Mandela came out of prison, he left behind what that struggle was like when he got in there. He left the anger. He left all of these things there because to make a new South Africa that would be changed for all South Africans, that had to be left there. So one of the things is, you can't tell, you know, a black child to leave their anger behind. You can't do that. It has to be of his own volition. And this is sometimes where privileged people think they have the authority. Well, you know, it's time to leave those things behind while you're not leaving yours behind. But you're educated enough, say, to somebody else to leave theirs behind. You, everyone be responsible for what they are here to do to undo this situation of, you know, white privilege, racism in all of its forms, and how we participate in the drama. How are we going to hold on to every little ounce of problem? You know, and as I said, I'm no researcher. It's just that I always turn back onto myself. I had, you know, a grandmother that had the first woman to own her own business in a small town in southern part of Texas. We had a different view about white folks. Maybe because there's so much of that blood in our family. I don't know, probably. But it doesn't count. The racism is still there, you know. So you just have to know where you are and where you're going to put your foot and not turn your back on the drama that is happening with the horrific, certainly in America, it is on a rise like nothing ever before.
Yeah.
White supremacy is taking over in so many areas. From what we can see, it's not taking over. I refuse to give that much credence to it, but it's certainly loud.
I expect it's going to come to Europe.
Oh yeah, if it's in America, don't worry, it'll be there.
Yeah. I feel to end in this place with what you said about Nelson Mandela, about us all being willing to just leave it all behind. And I just want to pipe up and reaffirm, I've heard conversations that racism, that, you know, the conversation of racism isn't spiritual. It's a sidetrack. It's a distraction from the spiritual path. I think I've been on the spiritual path since I was born, definitely since I climbed the steps of Sacré-Cœur in Paris. I want to tell you how spiritual this conversation has been, and it particularly when the feedback came my way. That was a moment of real confrontation with a part of me that I did not want to see. It was the greatest spiritual gift I've ever been given. So don't you go bypassing this really essential subject. If it hasn't come to you yet, because you live in London, you live in Paris, you live in Rome, it's coming. And when it comes, grab, read, and show up for the new conversation, please.
There's one more thing I'd like to add about that when you say leaving it behind. It's leaving it behind, but what comes with you when you want to move forward is knowledge.
Yeah.
You don't want to leave that knowledge out, because often the idea of leaving it behind means we don't have to address that. For a lot of people, especially white people, it means we don't have to address it, but we do.
Yeah.
And I'll make this one really short. On Sunday, we were with friends, and it came up about Algerians who fought for France in Algeria, and how when they had to leave at the end of that war, and they came to France, and they are not welcome. And now to this day, they have descendants, and they live in communities. It's not balanced. It's not right. And instead of seeing them as French people, or people who fought for France, they are rejected. And I made a point to mention, because it hurt my heart, because the woman who was talking about it, how they can't bring their communities together, and she'd like to know why, or she'd like for them to do that. She said, because they come with all of their problems as well.
Mm.
To me, those are y'all's problems.
Yeah.
Those are, both sides have the same problem. And it's a discussion that they are not willing to have here. So of course I brought it up to her.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. That's why there's that, it's there. And as long as it's considered their problem and not our problem, because the French people don't want to face their shame. And then the Algerians who have to leave, they don't want to face their shame. Mm. The shame that they're not welcomed in a place where they fought for them against their own people.
Yeah.
It's kind of messy.
Yeah.
But there is something, and I mentioned her, it's time for that conversation to be had. But it's like that everywhere. We can talk about America, we can talk about England, we can talk about Spain, we can talk about these things everywhere. It's there. So when we talk about leaving it behind, we have to be aware of what is it that we're leaving behind. Mm. We're leaving behind our feeling that we have to fight and use rage to make a change. Mm. What we are taking with us is the memory of it and the assurance of it, and walking forward with the consciousness that we are all together. Everybody in the end wants the same thing. We all want that peace, love, happiness, and to know that we are blessed, and to awaken to the fact that every ounce of our life is filled with grace.
Beautiful. Lucien, thank you for your time, for your wisdom, for your presence, for your joy, and for your fierceness and your clarity. Mm-hmm. So everybody, Oshun is completely available. At the bottom of this video is links to her website, links to her page on Facebook. She exists. Go check her out in France. Let her show you the Black Madonnas and some. Thank you all, everybody, for being with us and following this conversation. God bless all of us. Amen.
Amen.